It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And now at 6:33, a Fort Lauderdale family is holding out hope that a missing teenager will be found. We're approaching 4 years since Sophie Reeder disappeared. CBS 4's John Murray has new clues on this cold case.
Sophie Reeder vanished nearly 4 years ago here in southwest Fort Lauderdale. We know she crossed over the New River, but for her father, her mother, investigators, the hardest part is not knowing.
This is definitely a case that I wake up thinking about on a regular basis.
Jennifer St. Jean is Fort Lauderdale's lead detective on the case. We met her at the corner of Southwest 18th Avenue and Southwest 11th Court. It's here police tracked Sophie's cell phone that went silent several hours after she was seen walking in the area.
It wasn't uncommon for her to go for walks, so we believe that maybe that night she was going for a walk, maybe meeting up with a friend or something, but we're not sure.
Police got a search warrant for a unit in the complex next to where the cell phone was tracked because Sophie had contact with at least one of the occupants. In the warrant, detectives say she could be held against her will.
All that led us to believe that she, you know, wasn't intending upon leaving long term. We know that Sophie was dabbling into maybe different websites that were adult in nature, which could have gotten her entangled into human trafficking. So that's why that was one of our theories.
Over the years, on the anniversary of Sophie's disappearance, flyers have gone up with the hope of jogging someone's memory.
No piece of information is insignificant. If you know anything, call Fort Lauderdale Police, 954-828-5534. In Fort Lauderdale, Joan Murray, CBS 4D.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
I am Lauren.
I am Ken.
And this is Paradise After Dark.
Dark, 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 dark.
Paradise After Dark is a bi-weekly podcast covering true crime,
unsolved mysteries,
missing people,
urban legends, and the dark side of the Sunshine State.
If you'd like to support the show and get a bunch of extra Paradise After Dark content, you can go ahead and sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/Paradise After Dark Podcast.
Or as we like to call them, family. Check out our brand new website.
On the website, you'll find links to all of our episodes, our mailing list, our social medias, and our Patreon.
Yep, our store is on there too, so you no longer have to go to Etsy for that.
Nope. Yep. Our store is up and running on the website.
Yeah, hit that link. Also, on the website, we have a virtual tip jar. If you'd like to leave us a tip, we'll give you a shout-out on the show.
Speaking of shout-outs, let's read one of our latest 5-star reviews. This one made me blush. This is from Tanya Mack. Excellent podcast on Florida crime. I've been listening to Paradise After Dark almost since the beginning and am a Patreon supporter as well. Thank you, Tanya Mack. Lauren and Ken put a lot of research into each episode. They're also just really good, genuine people who care about justice for crime victims and their families. Try a few episodes. Taylor McAllister episode is a really good example, and you won't be disappointed. Paradise After Dark. Dark.
I love it.
Thank you, Tanya.
Thank you, Tanya.
All right.
Okay, so Lauren.
Before we get into this week's case, we're going to do something a little different. So I've been working on gathering facts and information about human trafficking in Florida, particularly sex trafficking, for the better part of a year. And then this case, the case of missing 15-year-old Sophie Reeder, came across our radar. So this episode is going to be a combination of the case of missing Sophie Reeder, which is the most important takeaway, but also I'm going to be spitting some facts and resources at you, our listeners, to be aware of, because human trafficking is happening here, all over Florida, right in our backyards, and the more you know, the more you can help. And as always, if you see something, say something. So I'm just going to dive into it. What is human trafficking? Human trafficking is the recruitment, harboring, transportation, provision, or obtaining of a person for labor or services through the use of force, fraud, or coercion for the purpose of subjection to involuntary servitude, debt bondage, slavery, or a commercial sex act. Currently, there are approximately 30 million people enslaved throughout the world, with 3 million located right here in the United States.
I don't want to interrupt you, because I know you, 30 million people. Think about that for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
30 million people.
Are slaves.
Exactly.
Many of these victims are lured with false promises of financial and emotional security. Instead, they are forced or coerced into commercial sex or prostitution, domestic servitude, or other types of forced labor. Since 2009, the Florida Department of Juvenile Justice and Children and Families have investigated over 1,500 child trafficking cases.
That's in Florida.
Yes. So what is child sex trafficking? Child sex trafficking is a form of human trafficking defined as, quote, the recruitment, transportation, transfer, harboring, and/or receipt of a child for the purpose of exploitation before the child reaches 18 years of age. Sex trafficking has been described as the largest slave trade in history and as the fastest growing form of contemporary slavery. As many as 300,000 school-aged children are at risk for sexual exploitation each year in the United States. 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually assaulted by the age of 18. The life expectancy of a commercially exploited prostitute is 7 years.
Ooh.
Up to 90% of minor victims are under the control of a pimp. Approximately 1 in 7 youth online, 10 to 17 years old, received a sexual solicitation or approach over the internet. All of these facts and information is coming from a child human trafficking curriculum that the Florida Department of Education and the CDC put together to raise awareness in schools and in the community. It has been incorporated into the sexual education curriculum taught in public schools in Florida.
Well, one of the things I want to kind of reiterate is we said the 30 million and just how scary that is. And if you think about what Lauren said, it's 300,000 school-aged children at risk each year. And I think what gets lost is people think 300,000 and they say, oh, well, that's, you know, doesn't seem like that much. That's per year. So a lot of times you hear that number and you'd associate it with like an all-time number when in fact that's every year.
Yeah.
And I think that is what really needs to be reiterated, because that's even scarier to think that, I mean, because you figure over the course of 10 years, what number are you at?
3 million.
Exactly. So you get the idea of how long that progresses. And then, of course, now they're talking 30 million people. The numbers are astonishing. So let's take a quick second here. Let's talk about who's at risk. Now, victims of trafficking can be any age, any race, any gender, or any nationality. Child trafficking can take a variety of forms, including commercial sexual exploitation, domestic servitude, or forced labor, kind of like Lauren said previously. Trafficking victims can be men or women, boys or girls, United States citizens, or foreign nationals. And human trafficking can involve school-age youth, particularly those made vulnerable by unstable family situations or have little or no social support, meaning they're just kind of loners you know, on a little bit different setup, set of rules, so to speak. Now, the children are at risk are not just high school students either. Now, studies show that the average age child is trafficked into the commercial sexual trade that's between 11 and 14 years old.
That's middle school age.
Exactly. I mean, you're not even getting into high school age. And traffickers may target young victims through social media websites, telephone chat lines, after-school programs on the streets, at shopping malls or in clubs. And in some cases, teens who are already involved with the traffickers are used to recruit other victims. In fact, a person can be trafficked without ever leaving his or her hometown. That's why we always said, when it comes to the internet, remember, that's just one more window in your house that you have to keep locked.
Yeah.
That's why we tell people, you know, you don't want to be hovering over your kids. But then again, you want to make sure that, you know, that all the windows in your house are locked just for everyone's safety.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while trafficking can occur to anyone in any situation, some factors have been known to contribute to a person's vulnerability to being trafficked. Now, these factors include poverty, the lack of an education or job opportunities, race, social caste, intentionally displaced people and refugees, and traffickers acquire their victims through numerous methods. They can be kidnapped and taken forcefully, or they can be lured by false job offers in countries other than their own. In some cases, after victims have been willingly trafficked into other places based on false promises, the trafficker will charge them a previously undisclosed fine to cover the expenses of transporting them to another country. This subsequently creates a lifelong debt the victim must work off through either commercial sexual exploitation or forced labor just to repay the trafficker. So what that means is, hey, I'm gonna take you to the border or into this country, mm-hmm. but you're going to have to pay. You owe me for all these things. So right. I paid this much. Plus, you have to pay me for doing the job.
Right.
Oh, you can't afford it because you don't have any money. Well, guess what? Now you're going to have to work for me because I did all this stuff for you. And that's just a nasty game. But that's the game, unfortunately, these traffickers play to try to get people to somewhere other than where they are.
Right.
You know, and sadly enough, a lot of times it's people wanting to leave. So they seek out these people to get them out of the country. And sadly, they force themselves into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say it that way, but that's unfortunately the case. Now, according to the United States Department of Justice, human trafficking is now the world's second most profitable criminal enterprise, sharing this position with illegal arms trade and second only to the illegal drug trade, which I don't think any other criminal activity is ever going to pass that. Now, many perceive trafficking as something that happens overseas or to foreign nationals and or as a crime that involves movement across state or national borders. The reality is, however, that trafficking affects both foreign nationals and U.S. citizens and can occur within the victim's own community. And since 2012, listen to this closely, since 2012, all Florida counties have had at least one reported instance of human trafficking.
So let's take a look at how this happens. An article from ABC Action News from January of 2020 tells the story of a woman named Tatuana Joy. Joy was 18 years old when her mother and 2-year-old brother died within 6 months of each other. Before tragedy struck, Joy had big dreams and a bright future. As a high school student, she won a district-wide High Achiever Award and dreamed of singing at Disney World. At 19, Joy said she started dancing at an Orlando strip club to try and provide for her 3 younger sisters. That's where she met a man named Waylon Rodriguez. At first, Joy said Rodriguez lavished her with attention and gifts to gain her love and trust, but soon he began selling her for sex. "I didn't want to do it. I hated it. I absolutely hated it," Joy told ABC Action News I-Team investigator Jackie Calloway. Federal court records also show Joy was repeatedly and brutally beaten by Rodriguez. "He was a very violent guy," said retired Tampa Police Corporal Mike Victor, who worked with the FBI on the case against Rodriguez. "Punched in the face, that was his favorite," Joy said. "I would be punched square in the face." Rodriguez even branded her with a tattoo on the back of her neck with a dollar sign and the letters GMB, which stood for "Get Money, Bitch."
Jesus.
But within a month, Joy's story took a strange twist as she crossed the line from trafficking victim to child sex trafficker. Rodriguez was still selling Joy for sex, but he would also have her in a new role known as a bottom. I am the bottom, and you are supposed to listen to me when you are not having to listen to Daddy, Joy told the I-Team about her new role. While the trafficker is the head of the trafficking organization, the bottom is the second in command, according to Victor. They're the ones who take the money and train the prostitute, or the victim, what to do. Joy admits that she slapped the other girls as part of her new role. How many times did you estimate you slapped them? I-Team investigator Jackie Calloway asked. Maybe 10 or 15, said Joy. The I-Team obtained home videos that Rodriguez made of himself and his victims as evidence the FBI used in court. Federal agents said the recording showed Rodriguez training Joy and underage girls how to talk to and close the sale with potential sex buyers. One of the girls that was being trained was a virgin and just 17 years old. My job was to show her how to do the dates, make her more comfortable with them, said Joy. Joy said she finally ran away after Rodriguez beat her while she was pregnant. Rodriguez, Joy, and another bottom, Priya Gunn, were convicted in a Tampa federal court in 2012. Rodriguez is serving a life sentence on 5 counts of child sex trafficking. Joy and Priya Gunn both pled guilty to 1 count of sex trafficking of children. Joy, who must now register as a sex offender, has since moved to rural South Carolina.
Wow. So she gets taken in by this guy.
He lures her in.
Exactly.
With lavish gifts. And then,
and of course, I'm sure the oh, I love you, I really like you, you know, that whole thing.
And then turns around and starts selling her for sex, branding her, and then makes her his, like, second in command, recruiting and teaching other victims how to do the dates, is what they call them, the prostitution, the men.
Yeah.
So she actually got some charges.
But see, I guess I'm kind of at a loss with that, only because if she was kind of in a situation where she really didn't have much choice but to do that.
Right.
I mean,
she was young, vulnerable. She had no parents to speak of. Her mother had passed away. There was no mention of a father.
So do you think that she should have had there? I guess if she's out and just has to register as a sex offender, I guess there was some leniency, but yet she has to be punished because obviously she was an adult and knew right from wrong.
Right.
But she was in a situation where maybe she couldn't, maybe they felt that she could have just left anytime, which I think sometimes is a misconception. A lot of times people think, oh, why didn't you just leave?
Well,
it's not always that easy. I mean, especially when you got the fear of, you know, death and some other things that we'll get into that these traffickers instill in people.
So human trafficking is a growing problem in Florida.
Well, if you look at the statistics from National Human Trafficking Hotline, the number of reports are increasing every single year. And in 2014, there was 373 reports made to the hotline. And in 2016, that number was increased to 562, so 562, up from 373. And in 2018, it's up to 767. That's over double the amount of the reports in 4 years. Now, 2018 reports to the hotline led to the identification of 1,771 victims, 506 traffickers, and 306 trafficking businesses. This is where we would like to reiterate what we always say, which is if you see something, say something. I mean, and reports can be anonymous. You don't have to say who you are. You can just call up and give this information. So a lot of times when you see these numbers, 373 reports, 562 reports, 760, when you start seeing those numbers, understand those numbers can potentially yield these numbers, which is, you know, they find the victims, they locate them. They find the traffickers and the businesses that are doing the trafficking, and they're able to punish them. So that's why it's very, very important to recognize the signs and see something happening and, you know, pick up the phone and call. According to the study of U.S. Department of Justice Human Trafficking Task Force cases, 83% of sex trafficking victims identified in the United States were U.S. citizens. So it's not, it doesn't lean one way or the other. They were, you know, actual U.S. citizens. The same study also found that the average age that a trafficked victim is first used for commercial sex is between 12 and 14 years old. Now, some victims are sadly are as young as 9 years old. Now, according to the Florida Dream Center, which provides aftercare for human trafficking victims, the life expectancy for a child taken into sex trafficking is only 7 years from the date of capture. I think Lauren kind of mentioned that earlier. Now, think about this for a minute. You have a child that is taken in. It's 12 years old. By the time they're groomed, they're 13, let's just say, you're adding 7 years to that lifespan. And let's go 14 years at the oldest. So you're going to add 7 years, 21 years old.
Yeah.
That's still a child in and of itself. I mean, mm-hmm. at 21, you don't feel like a child at all. You feel like a, you know, I'm an adult. I can do whatever. But then when you get to be my age, like 45, you realize maybe in 21, I was still kind of a child in a lot of different ways. So that kind of adds a little, I don't know, a little bit of fear to it, you know, because I mean, now you're talking about a life expectancy, not that they're going to be found or saved or released, that they're basically done with. And a lot of times right. The traffickers, like, you've outlived your usefulness, you're too old now, and they just dispose of them.
Yeah.
Well,
unfortunately.
Yeah. And you understand what I'm saying? I mean, that's unfortunately what they do. It's not a, okay, you can go back home now, we're done with you. It's not that easy. Now, looking specifically at Florida, so let's take a look at Florida. Florida has been known as a hotbed for human trafficking because of the state's economy. With Florida's booming agricultural and tourism industry, these are two industries where trafficking can flourish. Now, right now, Florida ranks number 3 as far as states for trafficking, number 1 being California and New York being 2nd. And that's mainly, I guess, predominantly because of the population.
Right.
And believe it or not, I mean, I think Nevada, they said, was out of, if you base it on the population, Nevada was probably one of the worst places to be. And I guess that has a lot to do with, I think Vegas can skew a lot of those numbers. If you took Vegas out of the equation, I think.
Well, and prostitution is legal in Nevada, in some parts of Nevada.
Well, I guess that's true, too.
And it is close to the Mexican border. And I know, unfortunately, I think a lot of the cartels and whatnot are just recently, I want to say in the last decade, not just running drugs and guns, they're running humans.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that area of the country, I think they have that to contend with as well.
Yeah. Well, like I said, well, we said, you know, Florida is the booming, is kind of the booming area for this and ranking 3rd. I mean, there's always potential to increase, but, you know, you're running, like I said, between California and New York. But what's the, I guess New York is the tourism, maybe because of I mean, they would do it because there's so many people there from everywhere.
Right, yeah.
And in Florida, they do it down here because a lot of them, it's not even really a sex thing. It's more of a servitude, like you had said earlier.
So according to WFLA.com, in an article posted in January 2020, here's some helpful information about where human trafficking is happening here in Florida. So the top sex trafficking venues in Florida are obviously hotel and motel based, commercial front brothels, online ads, venues unknown. I know that they took down Backpage.com. That used to be like a Craigslist.
Yeah.
But they wiped that away. That doesn't exist anymore.
Well, we're also, like you said, on the commercial front, commercial brothels. I think that pertains to a lot of the salon and spas.
Well, yes, you're right.
Because we've had an influx of busts.
Yes.
Just in our neck of the woods.
In massage parlors that were operating as brothels.
Exactly.
And there's also street-based sex trafficking and other venues.
Prostitution, like?
Like straight up, like on the corner.
Which used to be, there's one street we had in our town that was really bad. Really bad.
I mean, yeah, they cleaned it up.
It was really, you know, it's kind of the running joke. for lack of a better term.
So top labor trafficking venues in Florida are domestic work, agriculture, traveling sales crews, restaurants and food service, and other industries.
Now, the traveling sales crews, is that like the people that come around and try to sell you stuff door to door?
Yes.
Now, these aren't necessarily people that were sex trafficked.
No, these are just labor trafficked.
Exactly. So these are people that may come. And again, this is the, hey, you owe me for bringing you here. Now, you're going to go around door to door and sell this stuff, which I used to call them payday pirates. And our patrons know our Super Duper Pooper episode. Uh-huh. We had the payday pirates where I discussed that, where I used to get these people every Friday. They'd come by, and they were usually non-American. Well, non-American speaking, I could say. I can't say whether or not they were American citizens or not, but they didn't speak very good English, but they always came around selling these things. And once you get into deep this, I never realized that was part, you know, that could have potentially been what they were doing.
Right. And that's why we're putting this information out there. Another one is agriculture. We live close to Immokalee, which is a big farming community. And I would feel safe in saying that there's a large amount of those people that work in those farms that are being forced to work in those farms.
I agree with you. I think you're absolutely right.
I don't think that they came to the United States thinking that they were going to be doing this backbreaking labor, picking oranges and tomatoes.
Yeah, you don't envision that that's the case, you know, because they're not living in the best conditions. I mean, yes, they're given homes, they're given a house, but, you know, a lot of times they come here to do is work. They want to work, but the problem is the money that they're making, and that's where a lot of this can be misconstrued, mm-hmm. is they come here to work so they can send money back home to their families. So they get to the border, they get crossed over, they get put into these fields or the hotels to do housekeeping, whatever. The biggest problem is they're here on sort of their own free will. If I guess that's a good, I can't really say it any other way. They're here on their own free will. They're trying to send money back, so they're here to work. But the biggest problem is the traffickers are taking a huge chunk of their money to where they're not able to really make that much. So what they should be getting paid and keeping, they're not getting.
Right.
Because they, like we spoke about earlier, they're having to pay this back, which, again, that's what makes them, I'm going to say, a slave for lack of a better term, because they're not really making a wage that's worth anything.
Right.
By the time it's all said and done. Like, okay, well, yeah, here's your cut for the day, but you owe me this, you owe me this, you owe me that. You got to pay this back. All right, so here's your, you know, $1.50 an hour.
So Florida has more than 5,000 registered travel vendors, as reported by the Florida Department of Agriculture. Now, according to the Florida State University Center for the Advancement of Human Rights, travel agencies are regular collaborators with traffickers.
Huh?
Yeah.
What?
Travel agencies are regular collaborators with traffickers.
Well, I'm going to have to talk to my agent because this is the problem. I want to make sure that she's free and clear of all this mess.
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
Well, I guess they're in that business. They would know. You know, they would know. They would know that, you know, where to go and where to look.
Right, exactly.
Let's look at another case here in Florida. A young girl who we'll call Jane lived in Plantation, Florida. At 12 years old, she was raped. The downfall, she trusts everybody. She would always feel that nobody would hurt her, Mother Lisa said. The family began family therapy, but processing those emotions at such a young age, Jane was more reluctant to comply, and Jane soon began to pull away from her family. She became more secretive about her choices and the people she would surround herself with. When Jane was 17 years old at Plantation High School, at a football game, she met a man 2 years older who soon wanted to meet her parents. We opened our doors thinking we were doing the right thing as parents, Lisa said. That 19-year-old man was actually a Romeo pimp who had a plan that was going to shatter the family's world. Now, Romeo pimp, or sometimes called a lover boy, and these lover boys are human traffickers who usually operate by trying to make young girls or boys fall in love with them. Once they have their victims sort of in their influence and their control, they exploit them. Now, his job as a Romeo pimp is to see the weak link in that family and to see the person she loves the most. That's the person he is going to hold over her head to get her to do anything he wants her to do, Lisa said. As Jane's lying and deceit continued, Henry, this is Jane's father, checked her phone, and on it, a picture of herself advertising for sex. Now, Jane left the morning after her parents confronted her about this, and she wouldn't come home for years. She was only allowed to see me or speak to me when she did everything she was supposed to. Only when she was a good girl, Lisa said. Constantly receiving bills from the emergency room, Lisa and Henry knew their daughter was being beaten mercilessly. Now, at night, they would drive the streets hoping to see her and have the opportunity to confront her pimp. I just can't imagine that. That you have to get in your car every night and drive around hoping, just hoping to see your daughter on a street corner somewhere.
Yeah.
Only just to see her. I can't even imagine. Now, Jane didn't willingly come home until 3 years later when her pimp almost strangled her to death. Now, since Jane's homecoming, Henry and Lisa founded a ministry to expose the horrors of human trafficking. Now, while Jane was able to pull herself out of the horrible situation, actually only 1% of human trafficking victims will ever be rescued. That is a sad, scary statistic.
1%.
1%. We are just so blessed to have her whole and to have her home, Lisa said. Now, this story came from an article on WPBF.com, which is ABC 25 WPBF News. 1%. 1% survival rate.
This is a hard episode to get through, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just this situation here.
I know.
But it's very informative as to how simple this can be. You got a 17-year-old child. They go to a football game. They meet this guy. And this guy is there knowing full well what he's doing. He's looking for that one person that we described, the symptomatic person of, you know, maybe they're a little bit of a loner. They don't see things correctly. They don't have any friends, whatever the reason. And then they kind of fall for him. They get him and they bring him back to make him do all the stuff. So this guy knows what he's doing. He's 19 years old and he's already a pimp. Something tells me that he's pretty good at doing this.
Probably.
And I can't believe that she was the only one.
No. So human trafficking can also go unnoticed, even by an individual interacting with a victim on a regular basis. Recognizing the signs is the first step in identifying potential victims. No single indicator is necessarily proof of human trafficking. However, recognizing red flags or indicators can help alert school administrators and staff to a human trafficking situation or another harmful situation. Now, referring back to the child human trafficking curriculum that the Florida Department of Education has come up with, here are some indicators or red flags to watch out for. Now, side note, you don't need to be a teacher to keep an eye out for these things. It can happen to anyone in your circle of family or friends, coaches, your friends' kids.
Yeah, parents on the field watching the game.
You know,
whatever.
Like, and anytime you're around kids, you don't need to be a teacher to look and see these things. But here's what the Florida Department of Education says. Unexplained absences from school or demonstrates an inability to attend school on a regular basis. Suddenly changes his or her usual attire, behavior, or relationships. Suddenly has more expensive material possessions. Chronically running away from home, acting fearful, anxious, depressed, submissive, tense, or nervous and paranoid, defer to another person to speak for him or her, especially during interactions with school authority figures. This may include an adult described by the student as a relative, but may also be a friend or boyfriend or girlfriend. Shows signs of physical and/or sexual abuse, physical restraint, confinement, or other serious pain or suffering. Seems to be deprived of food, water, sleep, medical care, or other life necessities. Having a new branding or tattoo. Having a boyfriend or girlfriend who is noticeably older. Making references to sexual situations or terminology that are beyond age-specific norms or engaging in uncharacteristically promiscuous behavior.
Everyone just take a second, hit pause, and think back to high school. Think of that one person that you may have thought fits this parameter, or some of these parameters are one. Because I know when we were doing the research and going through all this, I did. I'm not going to say the name, of course. I don't even know whatever happened to him. But I do know that this scenario or these factors came into play for this one particular person.
Right.
So everyone, just think about that for a minute. Try to think of that one person. And then take a minute and go back and see if you can find them. I mean, to give you an idea that every generation is susceptible to this. It's not just, oh, this is the stuff that's happening now. No, we've all been, you know, we've all, every year this happens. You know what I mean? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So based on everything that Lauren said, if you need to go back, listen to them again, these particular signs. If you believe you or someone you know is a victim of human trafficking, or you suspect an adult is a victim of human trafficking, please visit the National Human Trafficking Hotline or call them at 1-888-373-7888 or text BEFREE, that's BEEFREE, to 233-733. And if you suspect a child is a victim, please call the Florida Abuse Hotline at 1-800-96-ABUSE, abuse. 1-800-96-ABUSE. And remember, you can be anonymous. You don't have to give the information. I mean, you don't have to give your information. You need to give them some information, but not your personal information.
So let's get into the case of Sophie Reeder. And I want to say, before we even get started, there is no concrete evidence that Sophie Reeder was trafficked. But as you'll see when we go through the facts of this case, she fits the profile, and she was in contact with some known traffickers. So that's why I figured that this would be a good time to incorporate all of this information we just gave you about human trafficking.
Well, and but Sophie fills that. What I say, that fills the itinerary. She fills the gaps, not gaps. That's the wrong terminology. In other words, if you take a look at all of the things that you just spoke about,
yes,
they fit.
Yes.
And I think that's why Sophie's case, and like Lauren said, there's some things that point to it, but there's really no concrete evidence.
Sophie is still missing. She has not been found.
Exactly. We just have here at Paradise After Dark, we just have a strong feeling that this may be the case.
So 15-year-old Sophie Reeder disappeared sometime between the late hours of May 19th and the early hours of May 20th, 2017, in the Citrus Isle neighborhood of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, after she snuck out of her home for a late night walk. Now, Sophie's parents were divorced at the time of her disappearance, and she was living with her father. That evening, her father reported that Sophie was pacing around the house back and forth and acting very anxious. Now, he told Callahan Walsh, host of the show In Pursuit, The Missing, and son of the famed John Walsh, creator of America's Most Wanted, that at the time he thought that she was just being an anxious teenager.
Well, the following morning, her father, Patrick Reeder, went to check on her and found a candle burning in her room. Her computer was on her bed, and there was a cell phone on the nightstand, but no Sophie. She was nowhere to be found. Now, she had left all of her belongings behind, including $300 cash in a bag near the bed. And he said, "I saw a calendar on the wall with 19th X'd out." This is what he told CBS 4 Miami. And the 19th was actually the day that Sophie had disappeared. Now, Patrick originally thought that Sophie just went to a friend's house or went to visit her mom. But after calling around to the friends and family, who all said they hadn't seen Sophie, her dad contacted local authorities and filed a missing persons report with the police.
So right off the bat, there's conflicting information about the last time Sophie was seen by her father. The Charlie Project states that she left home at approximately 10 p.m. The New Miami Times reports that she was pacing the floor on her father's home around 11:30 p.m. He told her to go to bed. And her father told the local 10 News that he checked on her at 12:30. She was up, and then that was the last time he saw her. One of the only things we know for sure about the timeline that night is that Sophie was walking down Davie Boulevard about a mile from her home at 2:16 a.m. Now, this was caught on surveillance video. Sophie was dressed in a faux fur coat, sneakers, and wearing white headphones. She meandered in the area for a while and then walked eastwards. It wasn't uncommon for her to go for walks, so we believe she was meeting with a friend, but we're not sure. Fort Lauderdale lead detective on the case, Jennifer St. Jean, told CBS 4 Miami in an article on the subject.
Just to clarify, she was not walking with anybody.
No.
She didn't look like she was in fear for anything.
No.
She had her headphones on. She was just walking.
She was just meandering down the road.
She was just walking on down the road. So that when she's missing, this is another thing that kind of leads to, it can kind of go either way.
Right.
You know, because we're the human trafficking thing we spoke about, or she just left. But the fact that she's gone still, and what by the information that's coming up. At the time of her disappearance, Sophie was attending school online. Now, although she often hung out in the area of the Strand in high school, which she had attended for a short period, she used a public bus to get around.
Okay. I just want to interject what we said earlier about not having a strong social support. She was attending school online.
Yeah.
She wasn't in a structured environment. She used the public bus to get around. It's not like she had a parent taking her here, there.
And to clarify, she lived with her father, but she did live with her mother first.
She did.
And she, I think, what, isn't there somewhere we read that she chose to live with her father?
Right.
So yes. It's not like it's a broken home kind of thing. I mean, that's kind of a choice that she made. Yes, her divorced parents. And I don't think the parents really played any part in this at all as far as, you know, any animosity or whatever. Because he even said, I thought she just went to go see her mom. So it wasn't like it was like a battle with the child.
Right.
So we want to clarify that because, you know, obviously the family structure does matter. But the fact that there was only one parent in the home could, you know, could lead this one way or the other because he thought she had gone to see her. So again, like Lauren said, it's that social structure. Now, the weekend before she disappeared, she did spend time with her mother, Nicole Twist, on Mother's Day. And the pair went out to eat to a local mall for some shopping. And afterward, Nicole dropped Sophie back off at her dad's house. Now, according to the blog on the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children's website, Sophie's parents describe her as a sweet girl, introverted with new people, but extroverted and outgoing with her friends. She loved music, said Sophie's mom. She would go from listening to Nirvana all the way to Tupac. And the last one she was really into was Lana Del Rey. Who's Lana Del Rey?
Oh, I like Lana Del Rey.
Okay.
She's a singer.
I get that. Since others, I get that part of it.
She sings that song Video Games.
Oh, okay. I think I have heard that.
So after Sophie went missing, her mother searched her room at her mom's house and found alcohol, drugs, and some adult-type undergarments such as stocking and garter belts, all believed to be hers. That's a red flag, right?
Yep.
As we talked about earlier.
Yep.
Nicole Twist, Sophie's mother, told News 7 Miami, "When I went through her room, I saw things like stockings and garter belts, booze, drugs. I'm just surprised that she would even think about bringing that to my house. She picked the wrong crowd to hang out with, and I totally believe social media and being on the computer and talking to the wrong people led to her disappearance." Police say Sophie would go to websites to find so-called sugar daddies or older men who want relationships with young women. On her social media profiles, there were photos of Sophie made up to look much older than she was. Now, police also say they don't believe Reader ran away because she left the candle burning in her bedroom and they found $300 cash in the bag. Why would she leave without her cash?
Exactly.
So we know she was dabbling in adult material websites, which could have gotten her entangled into human trafficking. That was one of the theories, said Detective St. Jean.
Well, police say Sophie was experiencing undiagnosed depression and anxiety. Now, according to the Missing Pieces Network, an organization that helps families of missing persons, Sophie was extremely vulnerable because she was attending school virtually and spending a lot of time on the computer. What you spoke about earlier, again, it's just another window that people can get into your home.
Right.
So she's online already. So if the dad comes in or the mom comes in and sees her on the computer, well, All she got to do is say, oh, I'm doing school stuff. So she's already got that alibi, if you will, or the excuse for being on the computer when in fact she could have been doing other things, which sadly nowadays the electronics, the computer, the access to websites, they suck in kids or young people, and then they just like becomes an addiction.
So Sophie had two cell phones.
Two
cell phones, which is also a red flag. But neither of them have been active since her disappearance. Now, one cell phone we know was left behind in her bedroom when she disappeared. The other one was on her when she left home.
Well, we do know that detectives were able to track Sophie's movements by using the pings from the cell phone she had on her. Now, she left home at 12:45. She walked down Davie Boulevard, as we mentioned earlier, and was also on CCTV footage that, you know, that caught her, that Lauren spoke about earlier. And then she walked near the Broward Medical Center, and the last phone ping was in the vicinity of Southwest 11th Court. And after this, it was either turned off or the battery died. One of those. So obviously, there's no more information coming from the phone.
So the phone Sophie left at home had only 12 contacts in it. One of those contacts was a known felon who is known to reside at that home on Southwest 11th Court. Sophie had made many phone calls to this person, and this man had over 30 violent crimes on his record.
And this is where this episode kind of comes together.
After the last time that Sophie's phone pinged at the residence of this violent convict, he, the convict, made a phone call to another man who was a known human trafficker. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Approximately 2 months after her disappearance, police got a search warrant for a unit in the complex next to where the cell phone was tracked. In that home, investigators dusted for fingerprints and interviewed three men. No arrests were made, but 25 cell phones, two computer towers, ammunition, and a pair of white headphones, believed to be like those that Sophie Reeder was seen wearing just prior to her disappearance, were confiscated. An affidavit obtained by a local news station shows that the individuals in the house were suspected of violating three statutes, including murder, kidnapping, and human trafficking. Investigators never publicly connected any of the items in the home to Sophie Reeder or her disappearance. But
in an article from October 2020 with Miami 7 News, as far as human trafficking theory goes, Detective Jennifer St. Jean says it's very prevalent in South Florida, and unfortunately, it's so easy to get entangled into it and not even know necessarily right away that you're involved in it until you're so deep in it that you don't even know how to get out.
Now, Nicole Twist, Sophie's mom, says, as a mom, I have conflicting feelings that even if maybe it would be better for her to be dead than have the life that she's having now. What does she have to do to survive? I could imagine what kind of hell. I think she's probably strung out on drugs and having to prostitute.
Detective Jennifer St. Jean states, the grim reality is she could be in a very dark situation right now, which is why we're hoping for any tips or any leads that could get us information so that we could locate her safely.
Again, if you believe you are a victim of human trafficking or suspect an adult is a victim of human trafficking, please visit the National Human Trafficking Hotline or call them at 1-888-373-7888 or text BEFREE, that's BEEFREE, to 233-733. If you suspect a child is a victim, please call the Florida Abuse Hotline at 1-800-96-ABUSE. And we will definitely be posting photos on our social media of Sophie Reeder and what she looks like. So please share that, especially in the South Florida area, all over Florida. She could be anywhere at this point.
That's the worst part about the trafficking thing is they sometimes once they get them in your community, they can keep them there or they can move them.
So we're putting out a call to action that we're going to be posting this episode and we're going to be posting these photos. And please share if we can just help one person that,
if she's in this situation and we can get her out to the point where our other case, Jane, who was able to come out of this situation and be part of that 1%, that would be amazing, you know, because here you are, a child. And I think the worst part was because she was online, I think the reason we lean more to the trafficking part was because of the items and the materials that were found at her mother's. I think that whoever this was grooming her, pre-grooming her to get her ready for this situation. She didn't realize what she was actually going to get into. I think that maybe he was playing that lover boy thing and trying to get her brought in. And it could be that she is into prostitution and got to get her out of that situation.
Right.
Like Jane and help. So please, if you need that number again, it is 1-888-373-7888 or text Be Free to 233-733.
Or the Florida Abuse Hotline, 1-800-96-ABUSE.
Absolutely. So that's a sad case for tonight, but it's definitely a missing child, which means that there's still a possibility. So I guess that's going to be it for tonight, Lauren.
Again, if you'd like to support the show, please subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/ParadiseAfterDarkPodcast. If you don't want to subscribe to Patreon, you just want to give us a tip, go ahead and head over to ParadiseAfterDark.com. We've got a tip jar on there.
Cha-ching! And check out our website, like Lauren said. Our social media, our Patreon, all that stuff is on there. Our merch store, everything's on the website.
And please make sure to subscribe to the show on whatever platform you're listening and rate and review. This really, really helps us branch out and reach a wider audience.
And thank you, everyone, so much for listening
to Paradise After Dark.
Duck, duck, duck.